You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Show Jumping Podcast, a fun and informative show for riders, owners, trainers, grooms, and fans of all levels.
I'm Ashley Winch in Kansas City, Missouri.
And I'm Christy McCormick in Saratoga Springs, New York. And you're listening to the Show Jumping Podcast, where we answer your riding questions and chat with fellow horse enthusiasts about the world of show jumping. Joining us today, we have my good friend, Melanie Liner, who was one of the first people I got to work with when I was starting a business about 15 years ago. Mel, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You were such a vital part of the beginning of Oasis Show Stable. So I know that you've known me for quite a while and kind of seen a little bit of an evolution for the business side of things. Can you just tell our listeners a little of your role with us and now what you're currently up to?
Yeah, sure. I started off grooming for you at the lovely Saratoga Classic. And from there, stayed with you, got to ride a little bit more, became a barn manager for, 4 years? And then helped you with riding and with managing the barn and clients and other staff, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
That serves my memory. Thank you for refreshing that. Remember you as the integral part of our operation for a long time. Oh, and by the way, listeners, this is the same Mel who had the unfortunate tooth accident with the unruly horse that we discussed a few podcasts ago. So you're making a return in our
the
podcast.
The toothless wonder over here. That's me.
Well, that's what I remember about you is your effort that you put forth was so strong that you were like, I really tried my best to get that ear clipped, but she just won't let me.
I can't do the other one. I don't think I can do it.
Okay, let's not do that one today.
Yeah. Had to get done, man. We were like placid.
That's right. I'm pretty sure we threw a bonnet on her at that point. Why I didn't think we should do that from the start, I don't know. It was my silly perfectionism at that time. So anyways, for another topic.
Yeah. But now since I left the horse world, I went back and got my degree and my master's in forensic psych. And I am currently working as a registered behavior technician, working primarily with children with autism. So that's where I'm at now.
Gosh.
But what has been so fun in the last few years is that my niece Nora started taking lessons at a local barn here. She's a wonderful trainer and she's on her second leased pony. And it has been really fun watching her learn and experience the sport for the first time. And I've actually gotten back into riding as well, which has been a completely different, a page from a different book I didn't know existed, because it has been nothing but joy and fun. So it's been a very cool time since I left the horse world.
Did you think when you left us to go back to school, you would ever ride again at that point?
Honestly, no, I didn't.
Either answer is fine. Yeah.
Well, you know, as you start riding as a young child, like you think about growing up is, you know, being a professional and, you know, jumping the big jumps and winning the classes and, you know, living the dream. And so I, you know, worked with you, which I learned so much working for you, you know, being included in lessons, having you teach me. Like, I hear your voice in my head still now, teaching me as I go. But I got to, you know, to that level and I was like, you know, I didn't get, you know, I wasn't the top of the sport, but I was like, you know, I think this is not my destiny. So, and just, you know, when you do that job, it is, and if you have an anxious personality like I do, you know, you work 6-7 days a week, you know, 15-hour days. And when you're not there, you're wondering, you know, what's happening there? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Is there a supplement? You know, are they, you know, are the horses, they can't be out that long. You know, it's just constantly.
Your brain doesn't turn off. Yeah.
Your brain doesn't turn off. Like, I would go home at night and I would lay there in my bed and be like, I put that tail out. Did I put that tail out? I put that tail out, and I would drive back out to the barn at like 11 o'clock at night, and the tail would be hanging on the door. So
for the braider, right.
The braider. Exactly. So yeah. I really, the pressures of the sport in general, the pressures, you know, of the job, which I wanted to do well, as validated by my toothless story. I just was really, I was burnt out. I was over it. I didn't touch or look at a horse for like 2 years after I left the horse world.
Well, and you met me when I was probably at my beginning stages or even close to peak stages of how intensely I took this sport, because I was so weird. You know, I just come from working for North Run. I had left Europe maybe 2 years prior, where I was able to show at a really high level, and I was determined to carry that into this new business. And, you know, at that point, I'm pretty sure I met you, what, Tuesday morning of Saratoga, week one, and was like, okay, you have 8 horses to take care of, and yeah. I need to be on the first one in 20 minutes, and I'm going to do them all first, and then all the clients are going to come and do them again. So mm-hmm. let's go. And yep. it took a while to understand how to take life so... you know, how to take life less seriously. And so I probably imparted a lot of that intensity onto you. But at the same time, you were like this exact human that I needed for me, because you and I had the same sort of, you know, mindset on how well things needed to be done and how hard could you work. And it didn't matter how late you stayed to get things done. You just did it. I think we threw Kimmy into the mix, my sister, at one point, right? She was there for a week.
Kimmy was there. Kimmy was there my first week. Oh, and I remember because I had worked. Well, Kimmy kind of was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
I had worked for Elizabeth Salter, who I trained with growing up. And Elizabeth, I learned a lot from her too, but she wanted her barn a certain way. And I was like, why are you cleaning the stalls 15 times? Like,
right. Why are you just cleaning this clean shavings? Why are you doing that?
Yeah, why are you doing that? But, you know, I mean, I loved working with Kimmy. Every time she came back.
And you know, I think, so Kimmy, as I don't know if you know this, but she was my first guest on this podcast, which wasn't so long ago.
Oh, and
she taught me, which clearly I didn't learn until now. She tried to teach me how to be a little less serious about everything. And, and because she didn't learn any other way and she didn't have any other mindset. And she was like, you know what? We're going to do, and it's not bad. It's just different. We're going to do what needs to be done. And that's just enough. That's just enough. And I was like, no, that's not how we do things. We do things to the nth degree as far as possible. And I don't care if you sleep or eat.
Yeah.
And, but she did know how to put her head down and go to work and get what honestly was needed, to be done. And I appreciate that from her so much. And I actually get to go see her shortly. So I will be happy to share this interview.
Please tell her I said hi. Yeah, please do. Love you, Kimmy.
Well, and kind of, you know, Kimmy was very, she learned to ride. So Kimmy is 6 years younger than me. So if Kimmy learned to ride as a pony kid about, I don't know, let's say age 6 and I was 12, by the time I was 18, she was 12. I had, you know, was just budding into this professional career and trying to learn to teach her. And I now currently have such a different perspective on what I think kids should learn or what's important, I think, for them to learn versus, and how they learn versus then when I was very driven and very, you know, only one way, there's only one way to do things. And it's probably must be the way I know. And I just think it's interesting to watch kids now. So the fact that you have a niece that's doing this is so cool. How is it really watching her? And do you see, like, you know, flashbacks of you and what you were doing at that age? How old is she? What did you say? She's
Nora is 9, and she is absolutely wonderful. And it's like I burst with pride every time she like comes out of the ring, or I, you know, get a video of her lesson. It's so fun. But you know, it's so interesting that you mentioned perspective, because you know, when you get older in years and you get farther away from something, you get such a better perspective on things than you had in that moment. And you know, just watching her, you know, enjoy brushing her pony and just, you know, getting on bareback and, you know, riding around or trail riding. And, you know, she shows she's been doing awesome, and has been learning so much. She's doing the 2-6, children's right now. And she, you know, is moving up, but watching, you know, the joy of it and how fun it's supposed to be, it like really reset something in my brain and like suddenly shifted all those years of all that hard work and anxiety into like a different focus. And I was like, if I had approached these things differently, I would have been, and I loved my job at the, you know, at the time, I loved what I was doing, but I would have been so much more filled with happiness and joy doing it. And it sounds like such a convoluted thing to say, but you know,
no, I totally agree. Keep going and then I'll give you my thoughts.
Well, and you know, I have like two things to say about this. First of all, circling back around, when you're saying about training kids, whoa, buddy. I give you trainers so much credit, because I, you know, I try to help her on like Sundays sometimes, and how you are able to communicate things to people, to your clients effectively, particularly like younger kids, it is beyond me, because I'd be like,
well, that, you know, that's so true. I want you to keep going, but I just finished a, I'm going to interrupt you and then you can keep going, but I just finished this clinic recently. It was at Sarah Torres Barn, and it was locally, actually. I got to only drive about 45 minutes down to SHJ farm that is down in Canaan, New York. And they had kids that were at all different levels, but about that like 9, 10, 11 age. Mm-hmm. And I haven't taught that level for quite a while, and figuring out how to explain things in a way that age can understand. Cause you can't talk about shoulder in and how that's going to help your turn around the corner to the oxer. Like, they're like, what? They look at me like I have three heads if I said that, you know. Yeah. You just have to figure out how to explain left and right and how they can work together. I mean,
yeah, I was like trying to help her, and I was like, put your hand this way, but no, not like this,
not like
way.
That. Yeah.
You know, like use your leg this way. And you know, it was kind of like a little bit of a learning curve. Like, she has a wonderful trainer. So this is like very, like some days I'll just go out and, you know, help her when she's flatting around. But I mean, I give you so much credit, because it really is, it's so hard to do what you do and communicate effectively. And you know, you in particular are a fabulous trainer. I learned so much from you that I'm like trying to, you know, impart, you know, on Nora. But you know, you were able to communicate things in such a way that like you could instantly understand them. So kudos to you. Oh,
thank you. I appreciate that. But I also, I've had to really adjust too, in terms of, you know, you were pretty far along in your own education in riding, so that I felt like, you know, I feel like my expertise is really, or my strength is really in taking what someone knows and, you know, adding 10% here and 10% there, and this little bit can make a big difference to what you already know. And it's such a different story with kids when you're almost dealing with a clean slate, and which is awesome, because there's nothing for them to unlearn, which is the problem with so many students, including, you know, every rider has something that they need to not do while riding as opposed to do. And then you talk about it with these kids and you're like, okay, can you do this? And maybe it's new to them, or can you do that? And you're right. And the joy and the fun of it is such a huge part. And we as trainers can easily forget that, no matter what level we're teaching, but it should be, you know, it should be fun. And I try to now think about what is of value when I ride now, and can I find some joy or fun in it, versus what I found as value, you know, at any stage in my life, but especially a kid. And it's, you hope that there's some sense of joy that stays along with it. But I know that watching kids ride, it's easier to remember than how we started.
Absolutely. And you know, the first question when she comes out of the ring, I'm like, did you have fun? Like, and that's just such, I don't know, the world, you know, in Florida, this is my impression, is that, you know, you're so worried constantly about, you know, what are the people that are up at the ring thinking of how I ride? Do they think I'm a good rider? Do they like, you know, the shirt I'm wearing? Are they going to say to, you know, oh man, what's that girl doing? Like, you know, you're always constantly have this dialogue in your head. And I, you know, I don't know if you remember, but we had a sail horse and you were helping me school it around. And I literally started crying and I was like, I can't do it. I'm going to ruin her. I can't do it. Like I can't do it. And you were like, Melanie, canter and hold the buckle in the corner and the distance is up, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, being out at the barn with Nora, her wonderful trainers had a couple of horses. She's like, you're welcome to ride. And I actually got back into riding. And Christy, the joy of it is unreal. And it is amazing that just when you're going out there and you're not putting any pressure on yourself, which, you know, it's easy for me to say, I'm, you know, been out of the game for a while, but you know, when you're just going out to have fun and you're like, oh, got too close to that one, my bad. And myself enjoy what you're doing. Like I showed in the jumpers, and this is probably me embarrassing myself, but I'm okay with that. This horse, you know, jumped really hard.
The whole point of life is to embarrass ourselves and then laugh at it. It really is.
You got to embrace it. But this is a good story because he was jumping so well and so high. And I was so out of shape that I was like going to outer space each time he jumped. And I would get it. I have a few strides and I get it back. But there was a turn after this one jump and my right butt cheek just gave up and I just spun right off. And
yeah, my butt cheek gave up. I love that.
Oh yeah, my body was like, nope, can't do it. We're got nothing for you. So I fell off. Done. But I was smiling ear to ear, and I walked out of the ring, and I was like, that was so fun. That was so fun.
And isn't that so awesome? I mean, that's the thing. What you find that's valuable in a ride these days, when there is no pressure, and really, honestly, that pressure comes from ourselves. Even when you're in the, you know, the hoity-toityest show that we could ever go to, honestly, nobody's even paying attention and nobody cares about them unless it's about themselves. And that's not true just because it's a hoity-toity show. That's just human nature. And so, you know, we think that everyone's watching. We think that everyone's judging. We're just judging ourselves. And we're just really our own biggest critics. And it's really tough to get out of that when you're in that very short-minded cycle. But sometimes it takes, you know, taking a break from horses in general to understand that. So so glad that you had so much fun falling off. And that's just so awesome.
Like, and I like called my mom afterwards and I was like, she's like, how'd it go? I was like, I fell off. She was like, oh no. I was like, it was so good. It was so much fun.
Great. Yeah. You know?
And absolutely. I 100% was like judging myself and like projecting that onto other people. But I wish so much that, you know, at the end of every ride, I wish I had just grabbed a buckle and then like just popped around things and just, you know, I'll be like, this one's just for us. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I wish we all were able to do that more. And, you know, the tough thing is too, and I'm happy that I gave you that advice because I know that in other circumstances, at least for even myself riding, especially on a, you know, sales horses, you always are trying to make them look their best so somebody sees them. But you know what? They're all horses and they're all doing what they can do and they all make mistakes and we as riders make mistakes and it's just going to happen. And this vision of perfection, and I somehow every podcast seems to come back to this, you know, perfection perspective, but it's just impossible. So,
and it literally choked my ability to ride. Like,
exactly. It can be so debilitating. Or let's be real, this sort of unique sport that is something that most people don't even know exists until they're in it. And it takes such a unique feeling of communication with the animal and coordination with your own body. I mean, believe me, take it from somebody who has gone from riding, you know, 12 hours a day for mostly her entire life to now trying new sports, trying new physical things. And my body's like, I'm sorry, I don't know how to function unless I'm on a horse using two hands and two legs in the middle of your body to make that go. Like, they work differently. What? I mean, and that's just because I had a million hours in the saddle and a million reps. And so it's really unusual for us to be doing this at all. And then the fact that we're doing it and go, oh my goodness, how can we not control this 1200 pound animal to be, you know, beautifully flowing over these eight different obstacles. I mean, what? What? Yeah.
Perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Like getting on a young horse and, you know, having, you know, a discussion for 45 minutes and then being like, hey, we cantered straight down that last side. Or like, we didn't punt a rail today. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Or we didn't. Right. Time. We kept it up.
Improvement from the last ride. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's taking those small victories and like finding the small, like you find your joy, man. It's supposed to be fun. This is a fun thing. And yes, it is a business. And yes, you know, you can be serious about it and still have fun.
Well, and watching kids can remind us of that because, like I said, at that clinic, which, by the way, is SJH Equestrian LLC. I've already forgotten the name of it, and they're so wonderful, so apologies to that. But they have these kids that are just literally learning how to steer and to see when, you know, one kid, for example, could not keep her horse or her pony, actually, you know, out wide enough to actually just canter over a pole that was at the end of the ring. So she had to steer as a, you know, sort of like an end jump. And finally I walked down and stood to where she had to go around me, and the pony's smart enough to not run me over at least. And then she was able to do it. And the look of satisfaction and happiness on her face just to literally canter a pole at the end of the ring was pure joy. And, and it was so wonderful to just see how steering, the lesson of steering, which is a pretty much a lifelong lesson in riding horses, but it's the first thing you learn left, right.
Yeah.
You know, straight, you know, brakes, gas, left, right. That's A and B of riding. And we all have to start with those things. It was just awesome to watch that. And I don't know, it's tough to remember in hard moments where you're trying to perfect something that feels really, really hard. But that's finding excitement over just doing a little thing right is a huge deal.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like the magic of it, like watching her, you know, go in the stall with her pony when he lays down. Like when throughout the span of, you know, you go to do night check and someone's laying down and you're like, why are you laying down? You know what I mean?
What's wrong with you? Yeah, I know. We forget impulse, that stuff.
Yeah. Like your impulse isn't to like go in and be like, oh, he's laying down, I'm going to get next to him. You know, the fun and the mat, you know, bonding with your pony and, you know, which I'm not set to say that people still don't bond with their animals, but I don't know. It's just, it's such a cool, special thing. And I'm like, I get so excited. Like I said, every time I see her, you know, out riding or, you know, just loving on her pony, and I'm telling you, it's completely shifted the way I felt, because I wouldn't have started riding again if she hadn't gotten into it. So
that's really great.
So,
I mean, so imagine, and you probably have these conversations, but what do you tell her about, you know, do you give her advice on what your new perspective is or about what you've learned?
Yeah, I try to, I just try to tell her, you know, like, this is fun. This is supposed to be fun. And, you know, we can have, we can be serious and we can try really hard, but, you know, have fun, enjoy what you're doing, and, you know, and trying to be like, it's not about what ribbon you get, it's about how you felt you did, you know, how you did in your course, what did you learn, what did you pick up, you know.
I think at some level too, before these kids understand or realize what's even possible, like I remember being at one of my first schooling for shows in general. I have no idea how old I was. Let's say I'm under the age of 10. And another rider around my age asked me what division I was doing. And I remember this. I didn't know the name of the division I was doing. I just remember I was showing. Yeah. And I remember thinking, I wonder if I should start figuring out or learning, you know, what there. Wait, actually, my first thought was, there are different classes. Like, I didn't even realize that. And you know, how much that changes when you're like, oh my God, there's a derby coming up and I have to qualify for that, or I have to do, you know, the have to's. And
the have to's.
Just like there is no have to. There's literally in life, there's no have to. There's have to's like, let's meet your needs. Like, you need food, you need water, you need shelter, you need things like that. But anything past that, there are no have to's. So this is, and there are no shoulds either. This is such a comparative industry.
Yeah.
And maybe that's true of all sports. I don't know, but mostly we're comparing ourselves with other people. And for the most part, we're doing something that is at a relatively competitively recreational level. Let's say that, right?
And yeah.
The importance we place on it is really just from ourselves. And if I had really truly understood that, and I probably couldn't understand that until I've gone through all I've gone through, but if I could have someone say to me the whole time along the way, starting from when I was a little kid, this isn't that big a deal. And I don't mean that in terms of riding horses. I just mean that in terms of life. Like, this isn't that big a deal. This, you know, what can you learn from this to be a better human? Mm-hmm. What can you find pleasure in or joy in terms of working at something? And what can you learn to be good at? You know, there's real value in learning to be competitive and learning to be, you know, as good as you can at something. And I think that's what my parents really tried to teach me was, you're pretty good at this. Let's see how much hard work and effort can help make you really good at this. And that's huge. You should know how to do something to the best of your ability, even if you're not the best. But that's the whole thing. You don't have to be the best at it to be the best that you can be at it. And
that took me a long time
to figure out.
Yeah. Like, I'm spitting platitudes too. But, you know, the thing about it is, at least for me, the thing that keeps you from being the best you can be is holding on to all those things.
100%. Yep.
Because when I let go and started having fun, you know, Nora's trainer had this, you know, nice jumper, and I, you know, was jumping him around decent sized jumps, and I was finding them all and having a blast. And then it was like, he was being sold, and I was like, can I jump one big one? And she was like, of course. And, you know, I went from that girl who was crying about, you know, a 3.6 course, like, I'm going to ruin her. And I just kicked this horse down to a meter 40 oxer. And I was like, wee.
That's so awesome.
But like, it was, cause it was all just for the fun of it. And you know, it just.
And probably your horse had more fun doing it because of that attitude that you had while you were riding versus this like, tension.
You know, they can feel, you know this, they feel every little bit of what you're feeling. So if you're going around, you're tense and you're nervous, they're like, oh God, why are you tense and nervous?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know? Exactly.
But you can accomplish so much more. That's what I would like to go back and tell myself. It's like, you can accomplish so much more in this sport.
Yeah.
And as a person, if you let go of all that and just let yourself have fun and learn, having fun doesn't necessarily mean you like can, you know, stop learning, but.
Yep. Yeah, it's so true. And it's true, you know, that as we look at these kids and the next generation, which sounds cliche, but it really is, like, that pony generation right now, whether they are riding in their backyard for the rest of their life until they figure out what else to do, or they are little professionals as pony riders and continue on to be the best kind of juniors and professionals we get. Mm-hmm. You still got to keep that perspective. And I feel like the rest of the horse world would be a happier place if we all could remember that. And it's really hard to remember that. Let's say the other side of it, you know, when you're in the middle of it and you're really striving for that 90 and you're dissatisfied with the 89 or whatever it is, or it could be 79 to 80. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, it's your version of perfection or your version of better, you know, just don't always stop at that. It's just, it's gotta be, it's gotta be more than that. It's gotta be. And that's, I'm coming from a place now where I've taken the, you know, the focus off of showing and off of even riding so much. And I'm trying to teach and trying to give back a little bit to people who love this sport and want to find the joy in it and want to be good at it. That there is a real, not just balance, but sort of alignment that that can have. And they really, if you're truly finding both, they can help each other. It's not just, they're not mutually exclusive. So I don't know. I think kids can help remind us of that.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's so cool because, you know, you're watching, it's almost like you're watching a version of yourself. Like you see where she clicks, you know, the feel in her hand and, you know, how much weight she should be holding and her having a soft elbow and, you know, finding the right path to the jump. It's just, it's perspective, I guess. I guess it comes down to that.
Yeah. Well, and really your perspective is, right. Your perspective is you've learned that. So you're watching it to probably somebody who doesn't even know she's learning it, but she's just sort of, you know, finding it. And that's awesome too. That's a cool, cool thing to watch someone learn to ride by the love of it and the fun of it. I mean, think of when we were little kids cantering around on ponies when we didn't even know what a lead change was. That was kind of more fun than being so stressed in the ring about, oh my God, I just missed that change. Yeah, you did. But how were the other eight jumps that you maybe were a little better at than you were the last horse show, you know? And this real feeling of disappointment, I wish I had known long ago that I'm imposing that. And not to say you should be happy for, you know, any sort of relatively to medium to large mistake in the ring, but that medium to large mistake can't dictate your whole ride, you know?
It can't be like a wound. I would mess up, I'd be like, like it was a huge thing because I had, you know, all this internal and what I perceived to be external pressure, you know, from the world we were in. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, at Derby finals or anything, but I just, how I was viewed and how I was doing was so integral to my identity in the horse world that it really eclipsed. I mean, it was a cool job. It was intense, but it was like a cool, fun job. I took care of horses for a living, like these large.
Yeah. Horses for a living. I mean, fun job, and it has its own little unique marketplace for it, but it's a cool, fun place to be if you can learn to appreciate it in that way. And, you know, I certainly in the time we were together, I probably had way more moments of not appreciating it than I did appreciating it. And I don't know, maybe this podcast is more therapy for me than anything else, but I'm learning to see it in a way that you can be good at something and also laugh enjoy at mistakes. It. I don't know. Yeah. Enjoy it. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why it's taken me until now to see that, but it's so important. And I wish, and I hope that in teaching any kids going forward, that laughing at mistakes is a really big friggin' deal. Like that is a huge part because mistakes, failures, disappointments, problems is 100% are 100% going to happen.
100%
of the time. You know, not 100% of the time, but
it's part of it. It's part of it.
It's part of every single ride. Every single ride has some sense of this is an issue or a problem or not working and I need to work it out. So if you can sort of pause and stop in the moment and say, what is happening, or ignore it, that would be an even better situation. I hope, I guess we probably need to learn something from those kids, don't we?
Absolutely. I would say I learn something every time I go out there. I honestly do. Yeah.
What are your near future riding plans, or do you have none and just want to keep, you know, riding as for fun as needed?
I would love to be able to get out and ride more, but right now I'm just working too much, but, I miss it a lot. And, you know, I've made a lot of great friends out at the barn and,
There's a lot of really, really great horses out there.
But you know what's awesome is you miss it. Like, I love that.
I went back to missing it. And that's, you know, I went from riding, since I was three. And then I was done with it. And, you know, through Nora and through, Windy Way Farm, I love it again. You know,
yeah.
I have a house and I hung up my horse pictures. I'm looking at my Tommy picture right now.
Oh, which,
shout out Tommy.
Yeah. Tommy for our listeners is, to us, the infamous Sundance. And I'm sure nobody else cares who that is, which is lovely.
Oh, he's so important.
He's so important. Yes. But it was a very important horse to us. And that's another thing is, you know, having a horse or horses that are important to you can be an amazing addition to one's life, you know, and an animal, the relationship with an animal, I think is the biggest takeaway from all of this. Cause it can't just be about our riding, you know, that's kind of selfish, honestly. I mean, it's great. It's great for our own personal achievement and that's wonderful. I maybe selfish is too strong a word, but I'm not going to take it back though. I think too, it goes along with another podcast. I've said the horse has to come first, but the horse really does. And if we have any appreciation for what they give us, because that's the whole thing is they are giving us these lessons and we are learning from them how to laugh at life and how to laugh at ourselves. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand that, don't have a horse. You just shouldn't, you know, a true horse lover understands at least part of what they give us in life lessons. And again, I'm another Hallmark card, but I stand by it. And it's the only reason why I still do it at all, because it's so easy to just turn your back if it's getting too hard and say, this is just too much and just too hard. But if you can stop and figure out what that horse is, you know, giving you, I think that's the coolest part of it.
Oh, it's awesome. And, you know, like even like teaching her about, you know, horse care and, you know, what to do on the ground and, you know, how to clip a horse and, you know, and getting to know his personality, what's his mood seem like today? And,
you know, and how can you adjust according to his mood? Yeah, because like isn't that part of our job?
Yeah. It's like, it's all part of it. And it's all so important. And I feel like, you know, like you said, when you're in the thick of it, it's so easy to lose sight of things like that. And
it's supposed to be why we do it, isn't it? So to have fun and to appreciate the horse, those should be priority one and priority two, or vice versa. Appreciate the horse one, have fun too. So they can go hand in hand, but that those two things should dictate the rest of it. Those two things should say, this is what I'm going to keep in mind as I work on myself, as I work on my own riding, as I work on my own course or my own, you know, showing details. And remember that if I were 10 years old, what would I be thinking? I recently went to a concert where I was with a really awesome 13-year-old and we got to meet the band. It was a Bush concert, actually.
Oh,
and
really?
And yeah, it was really, really awesome. And the band, and we're in the VIP section and we're meeting the band and Gavin Rossdale, who is one of the most successful musicians ever, is signing this 13-year-old's poster. And it was his birthday, actually. And he wrote on the poster, "It's my 13th birthday. Please play Human Sand," which is his favorite Bush song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he signs it and he's got a million people coming up for VIP. He's probably just trying to get through the whole process. And we're leaving and he goes, wait, come back. And we go back and he goes, "Just remember, everybody here wishes they were 13. And isn't that the case about life? I mean, we should all wish we were 13 and we should all remember what it's like to be 13 or 10 or whatever. And have a sense of feeling like life is about fun and life is ahead of us. And no matter what age we are, you know, we only have so much time. And the earlier you can learn that life is just a ride and how can you get the most out of it, the better you are.
Find your joy. It's all about finding your joy, those moments of joy.
Yep. You know? You got it. And you got it.
Your day after a hard day of work going out to ride your horse should be that joy. So.
That's right. That's right. That should mean way more than what kind of ribbon you bring home. Way more.
Yes. I agree.
Well, I think that's a pretty good note to end on. Mel, I do miss working with you. I'm so glad you're riding again. This has been a great catch up.
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I miss you.
Yeah, same. Ditto. And give Nora a nice big hug for me. I don't know her, but I do wish her the best. And honestly, I wish her the best if she's only has, you know, dreams of galloping through the fields, or she wants to become a professional rider. Whatever she wants to do, that's awesome. But just tell her to keep having fun.
Oh, I will.
Good. All right. We'll catch up with you soon. Thanks a lot.
All right. Of course.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I just love the focus we're bringing to positivity in the saddle and the well-being of our horses, which of course includes ulcer care. Are you looking for a natural long-term solution for your horse's digestive health? Reline GI goes beyond just treating systems. This unique combination of gut-supporting hyaluronan and immune-boosting beta-glucan works in harmony with your horse's body to soothe and protect their digestive system. Unlike other options that can disrupt digestion and nutrient absorption, Reline GI maintains your horse's natural balance. Don't just rely on our claims. Reline GI is trusted by leading veterinarians and supported by scientific research, including a study by Dr. Nathan Slovis that demonstrated its effectiveness in reducing ulcers in active horses. Plus, it's Clean Sport certified, making it safe for use in competitions. Don't forget, for an additional 10% off, use code SJP at checkout.
This past week, I completed a clinic at SJH Equestrian LLC, which is a farm in Canaan, New York. It's very close to me. It's just south of Albany. The trainer's name there is Sarah Tora, and I had a wonderful time. And this time was a little different than my previous clinics because I had a large group of very young students to teach. And I did a repeat course of the course I used at Wildwood Farm, which was that nice figure eight course with some Cavalettis on one end and a couple of diagonal oxers and then a nice Cavaletti at the far end. I simplified it, and yet it was still so fun to see these kids try to navigate something that was pretty new to them. Most kids at the 8, 9, 10-year-old level, or even sometimes if you're still learning, the 11, 12-year-old are working on basic courses that are outside diagonal lines, and working on using the whole ring. And this was a lot of turning and a lot of steering, and we really had a great time. I have to say, every kid, no matter what their level, really tried as hard as they could. And I had a really nice time breaking things down. Normally, with the more advanced riders, you're working on some details to improve on what they already know. And this was really taking into account, you know, their learning skills that were already developed, which were turning with one rein or turning with just the outside, turning with the inside rein, but not knowing how to use the outside rein. And we really had to work on how to use both hands at once. And we also worked on how to use your track as much as you can to approach each jump. So if you can imagine a figure eight, many of those kids were wheeling and dealing and motorcycling around it in the beginning. And we really worked on how to steer and, you know, use your outside rein to keep out longer to buy yourself some more time on the landing of the next jump, which would buy yourself more time for the approach to the following. So I had a great time. Sarah does a wonderful job. She has a lovely farm and a 19-year-old daughter who rides very nicely, who was in the clinic. So it was a good perspective for me to see some younger kids who are, you know, who knows how far they'll take it, but they are starting to learn about the relationship with the horse and the relationship with their own bodies on an animal when that animal feels a little out of control, and how to use your leverage in a position, in their own position to gain control over the animal. So I had a great time doing it. And I really thank them for having me. And I'm looking forward to going back.
And now for everyone's favorite, well, at least mine, it's the Q&A segment of the show. And we got in a really, really well-written question. And this question comes from our listener, Eric, in Sherborne, Massachusetts. Now, Eric writes that he has been eagerly following along with our new podcast, and he's finding it super valuable and enjoyable.
Yay! Thanks, Eric. Thanks for the support.
Compliments will get you very far around here.
That's right.
And we love that. So thank you, Eric, for giving us a little love. But now on to his burning questions. Eric is a lifelong equestrian in his upper 30s, and he's starting to pursue high-level hunters on one of his horses. He's seeking advice on navigating the sport at this level after what feels like a delayed start. He's looking to understand how he can push himself and his horse to achieve all that they can ultimately achieve while grappling with some disappointments and limitations along the way. Eric's question goes on, and to paraphrase, he's looking for advice on balancing his ambitions with accepting limitations and potential disappointments. What do you got for us, Christy?
Well, first I would say to Eric, stop taking this so seriously. I mean, this is here as a cool, fun sport, and we are all just honestly here to have fun, which sounds great coming from somebody who has, you know, a list of accolades underneath my resume. And I don't mean that in a look how much I've done. I just mean, if I knew that I didn't have to be so serious about all of that at a younger age, I would have had a lot better time emotionally going through all of this. And it's so wonderful to give yourself goals, and it is so wonderful to push yourself towards what you think is possible, or maybe what you don't think is possible, but you're not sure. So first step is take a step back emotionally and take a step back in perspective too, because first of all, it's a sport. Second of all, it's also a bit of an art. You know, this is not, perfection is impossible. This is not something that is, not only is it not easy to do, it's also impossible to do it perfectly. So there's always going to be these, you know, gray areas on what's good and what's not. So if you can give yourself a little bit of perspective and laugh at your mistakes versus be frustrated with your mistakes, that has to be step number one. It took me a long time to learn that. I was really hard on myself as a young rider. I was really hard on my horses because I really, really wanted whatever result I was trying to work towards. And I had some pretty tough emotions to go through before I figured out that I rode better when I sort of thought of it a little more casually than I did when I was really serious and really focused on exactly what I had to do. Just give yourself a break and give your horse a break, where it's a process. It's going to go up and down. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days, and you're going to have good jumps within, you're going to have bad jumps within good courses. And you got to look at the stuff that's good and focus on how to do that more. And the stuff that's bad, or the stuff that's, you know, not exactly how you wanted it to go, you got to work on how to make adjustments from there. I think in terms of trying to work on the disappointment that you reference that comes along the way, if you can set yourself up to understand that disappointment is inevitable, and so it's impossible to ignore, and it's impossible to not have to go through that, and also know that the disappointment can lead to something even better once you get through it. If you're just sort of coasting, you're honestly probably going to stay at a plateau and not improve. So you need to fail in order to learn to even then push the scale a little higher and get going a little further than you might have just been sort of cruising along. As far as expectation goes, drop those. Totally, totally drop those. And I used to teach kids and adults and say, look, you need to work on what you're capable of and expect to do well so that you ride to the level of your expectations. I honestly now totally take that back. I think that backfires. I think if you have expectations for yourself that you don't meet, you're only going to focus on how you didn't meet them. I think if you can go into every day at the horse show as if it were a lesson at home, and you can focus on what am I working on today? What am I working on? Narrow your focus. What am I working on this ride? What can make this particular ride successful? You will have probably a more honest expectation of what's going to happen. And you'll also drop the ego part, because that's the fear part that keeps us from really letting things happen the way that they could. When you're afraid to fail, you're going to fail. And when you put a really strong level of expectation on what you think your horse should be able to do that day, you're more than likely going to be disappointed. You know, they're having a process too, especially a young horse. They are going through days and weeks where they are listening and they're in tune with you and you have a really good vibe going. And then the next day, or even the next class, if it's a young horse and their attention, you know, span has ended for that day, where they're thinking about their next meal back at the barn. And the fact that they are going to go in the ring and miss a lead change or have a rail down, they don't care about that at that point. You care, but they don't. And so I think if you can simplify what I just said down to take yourself less seriously, take the sport less seriously, doesn't mean don't work hard at it. Doesn't mean don't have, you know, long-term goals to get to. If you want to qualify for something, write that down. If you want to, you know, put down that you can, you know, you've won a number of ribbons or something at a different horse show, keep that in mind, but do know that your best chance of success is if you broaden your spectrum and you lower the finite expectation of ribbons or scores or perfect round, and you broaden into what's possible for today and what am I working on and can I see progress? I think progress is probably the best definition of success I can, you know, suggest to keep in mind versus anything else. So, you know, take a breath and don't worry one bit about your age and what you've done or haven't done or what other people are doing. Everybody's on their different path. You sound like somebody who has probably wanted to be doing this at this level for a long time, but not been able to. And now you are. Fantastic. Many people don't even get to that spot in their life and they're struggling on figuring out how they're even going to show up at a horse show. So appreciate where you are. Lower some expectations on a day-to-day basis and have a little more fun and make sure that you don't go through this phase of your riding life worried too much about success. And when you're finished with it, because that will happen at some point, you go, God, I wish I had a little more fun doing it. Because why else are we doing this? How's that, Ashley? Pretty good for answer?
Very, very well said. I love that we're dipping our toes into some sports psychology over here on the Show Jumping podcast. And, you know, to add, it got me thinking, I think it's just so cool how our sport is one of the very few really in the world where people of different genders and different ages compete against one another. Like,
yes.
To me, age is almost not a factor because our sport is designed for us all to compete against each other. And I think it's really beautiful when you look at it in a different perspective, right? Like, of course, we all want to be young, hot, and 27. Like, I mean, I do.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really cool to be able to go out and compete against a 65-year-old rider or a 19-year-old. And there's something that you can learn from both of those riders. And so, best of luck to you, Eric. Keep us posted. Changing gears a little bit, we have another question that comes from Katie in New Jersey. And Katie writes, what is a program? What are examples of a weekly or monthly schedule for a young horse or a horse getting ready to compete? Obviously, every horse and situation is different, but I would love a general guideline. I have a young horse who I keep at home with a trainer who I meet at horse shows, and I'm always trying to figure out the best program for him between competitions.
That's a great question, Katie. Thanks for writing in. You know, we say the word program so often and nobody takes the time to clarify that. Program just means plan, and program means intention. You know, if you have an intentional plan for your horse that you can even, you can write it down if you'd like to, you know, over the course of a year. And this goes back a little bit to Eric's question with his goals, you know, having a bit of a plan that you can say, okay, so my horse is jumping 2.9 really easily and getting down the lines well and navigating the course properly. And I'd really like to move up to 3.3 by the end of the year. Okay. So then there are steps to be taken between there, and you've got to divide up, you know, what I like to say is if that's, let's say that's your January and by November, you want to be jumping 3.3. So that means that you need to take steps to introduce exercises that will work on the horse's hind end and get that hind end a little stronger so it can jump bigger. That means gymnastics, but you can't do gymnastics every day. So pick one day a week where you can plug in gymnastics, and you can look up several different exercises online. You can write in here and I can give you a specific one, but change it up a little bit. So you're jumping 3 or 4 jumps in a row, you know, between different distances as well. You're doing bounces, you're doing 1 stride, you're doing 2 strides. They don't have to be big. All you're really working on is how to strengthen your horse's hind end so they have more push. Think about program as what you would put your own self in an exercise program at the gym. So you've got strength training, you've got cardio. Anytime they're jumping bigger, they need a little more stamina so they don't exhaust themselves getting around the course. You need a couple of cardio days. If you have some hills that you can work on cantering or trotting up them outside, that's wonderful. If you're inside, then work on different pace changes and get some galloping laps in there. You're not going to be flying around the ring for 20 minutes, but do some intervals. Do, you know, 2 laps at a nice organized canter and then do 1 whole lap at a lengthening of stride and repeat that 10 times. Program is really just a plan for your horse that you can stick to, whether it's weekly or monthly. So a normal plan for a showing horse might be you're flatting on Tuesdays, and that's to get them warmed up. We usually call Mondays our day off on a sort of traditional schedule for a horse. Tuesdays, you're flatting. Wednesdays might be gymnastic days. Thursday might be your cardio days where you're working on getting their lungs a little bit stronger. Friday, you build a course and you jump your 2.9 course around the ring. I like to jump 2 days in a row as far as courses or lessons go a lot, because I usually think the horses can remember a little easier what you just did the day before versus giving them a break. There's a benefit to breaking up as well. That's just a little spacing it out for them if they need that physically or mentally. So let's say you jump a 2.9 course on Friday, and then the next day you do the exact same course, but you put the jumps up to 3 feet. And see how they handle that. And then Sunday might be a relaxed day because they all need mental break days. So you take them on a trail ride. That's an easy, good schooling week before you go to a horse show. I very much like to give the horses a rest week the week after a horse show. And I don't mean no work at all. I mean easy work. I mean, you might give them, let's say you finish showing on a Sunday. You go home, you get them 2 days off instead of one. You give them Monday and Tuesday of just as much turnout as they like. Wednesday is an easy hack day. Maybe add in a little bit of flat work on Thursday. Maybe a trail ride day again on Friday. But you don't jump for a week after your horse show if you have the time. Maybe a Saturday day off or just sort of some grazing in the field, and then a nice flat work day on Sunday to get ready for the following week. That week of quote week off can really be at your own discretion, and really work on how does your horse feel when you bring them out every day. Are they kind of lazy and not wanting to walk too fast away from the barn? Then give them a light day. Are they eager and have their ears pricked forward and work, you know, wanting to get out and go to work? Great. Give them a little more exercise. That's a chance to get to know your horse a little better, because after a horse show, as we all know, we can be pretty mentally and physically exhausted. So you don't want to overtax your horse. And then back to the program, as far as over the whole year, you know, each month you're looking for a little more progression. So It might mean that you end up jumping 3 feet 2 days of the week instead of just one. And that goes on for a month or two and you see how they are. Your horse is going to tell you what kind of program you need because they're going to say, I'm struggling with this part. So let's work on this a little more. So, you know, I like to jump most horses if they're in a showing program 3 out of 4 weeks of the month. I definitely like to make sure they have a week off. And I like to make sure that flat work and gymnastics are always included. So it doesn't have to be a set perfect plan or program. It just has to be a plan that makes sense. And if you can, you know, write it out or think it out or talk to your trainer about it, and it looks like it's something that's helping work towards your goals, great. If you are over rehearsing the same thing over and over, that's not a program. That's just repeating. So it depends on the kind of goals you want.
And our last question for our episode comes from Kate in Florida, who is clearly the most high-tech listener we have, more high-tech than us as hosts. She sent in a voice memo. So impressed. Let's give it a listen and get Christy's answer.
Hi, Christy. I had a question about a horse that I've been riding who tends to be a bit colder than horses that I have been used to riding in the past. And I find that my natural tendency is to be sort of busy using leg and spur pretty consistently to try to keep him up to pace. And I'm worried that this is probably not the best approach because one, it could be annoying to him that I'm always at him. And two, I think I run the risk of having him get sort of numb to my aids if I'm using them too much. So I was hoping that you might have some suggestions or exercises that you would recommend that I could practice to use my leg and spur more sparingly and hopefully create more self-regulation or more self-compulsion within him without having to be so busy all the time trying to keep him up to pace. Thank you so much for any thoughts you have. Bye.
Thanks for that voice memo, Kate. It's always nice to hear the voice of a listener. Cold horses can be very challenging to ride, especially if you are used to riding horses that take you a little more. And the best exercise I can think of doing is one that I learned from BZ Madden. And the way that goes is you're going to start with a stick in your hand and spurs on, and you're going to be walking forward on your horse. And you're going to go from the walk to the canter into immediately the lengthening of stride or as much of a gallop as you can create by using all four aids. And the key is to use one aid at a time. So the way that works is you ask them to canter by using your cluck, then your leg, then your spur, then your stick. And they're in very quick succession. So it might even feel like you're using them all at once. But you were trying to use several aids to get your horse to go forward so they can associate the cluck with any of the aids that they feel on their body. And if you can go from the walk into the canter or into the extended canter and remain cantering forward for a good 10 or 12 strides, then come down to the walk, let them cool, you know, calm down for a moment, and then repeat again. The idea is to get your horse to be a little electric to your legs and forward from ready to go from your cluck and your leg that you can use in the ring so that hopefully by the time you're at the point in the ring where you need them to stay in front of your leg, a cluck will do the trick. Now, that is very easy to say. And on a cold horse that maybe isn't as motivated to go forward as you'd like, you're always going to need a little bit of cluck of leg and spur at the same time. That stick is crucial so that you can back up your leg. That's you know, the whole point of using a stick is to reinforce your other aids. So I would suggest riding him in a stick. I would suggest that short little exercise when you can on your own. And as far as just the day-to-day, trying not to be at him all the time, be aware of where your spur is so that, again, you're using it sparingly and not every second. If you use it every minute, they're going to A, get used to it, B, get annoyed with it, and C, probably get a spur rub. So using that lower leg, but with reinforcement is the way you want to think about it versus being at your horse with your leg and your spur at all times. So every horse is a little different. Anytime you can add in that little exercise, you can even do it in the schooling area, you know, before you're getting ready to go to your first jump as a warm-up, as if you've, especially if you've practiced it at home and they're used to it. So they're a little more attentive, and don't worry if that turns into a horse that's almost a little strong in your hand. That's good. That probably will ease off pretty quickly once you get in the ring, but you'd rather them be a little strong and pull you, even if it's only for a couple of strides, than you are always trying to push them, you know, from the back end.
Thanks so much for joining us for today's episode of the Show Jumping Podcast by Reline GI. Be sure to find our Facebook group, Overheard, on the Show Jumping Podcast, and feel free to send in your questions there or directly to me, Ashley at horseradionetwork.com. Keep your eyes up and your heels down.